OU Israel presents.
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayera. Recording and first broadcast of this show is Thursday, Yom Chamishi, the 13th of Mar Cheshvan, 5768, the 25th of October, in the year 07. We have a Torah reading this week laden with lessons to learn from our patriarchs and matriarchs, applying some of those lessons directly into our action and being warned against some of those actions as well. Those two are not contradictory. It is a fullness of lessons that we learn from those who came before us. But first, Psalm 130, a call to God from the dire straits we find ourselves in. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tihiena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai mi ya'amod, ki imacha ha-salicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvoro ho-cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael, mi kol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha-makom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula. Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. What I'd like to do, take one of the less major topics, I can't really call it a minor topic, but a less major topic in Vayera. You look at the Parsha of Vayera, the first thing that comes to your mind is Akedat Yitzchak. That's the finale and the main theme of Vayera. But there's a lot of other things that go on, like the destruction of Sodom and the visit of the angels at the beginning. And there's something towards the portion of the Akedah which is deserves some attention, and that's when Sarah demands that Yishmael and his mother Hagar be expelled from the house. Vatomer la'Avraham, she said to Avraham, Garesh ha'ama hazot ve'et bena. Ki lo yirash ben ha'ama hazot im bini im Yitzchak. I chase this, get rid of this boy and his mother, because Yitzchak is your heir. Now, I don't think this is like a soap opera, where the mother from a first marriage, a second marriage, is worried about her child. I think it's a matter of influence on Yitzchak. And I don't know if it's exactly the Gemara that I want to share with you, but it's one that led me to it by a train of thought. There's a Gemara in Masechet Brachot, which I won't read to you in the Aramaic. We'll do it in English. It starts like this. We'll put in the whole thing. It is related that a certain disciple came before Rabbi Yehoshua and asked him, is the evening prayer compulsory or optional? Now, in order to do this, I have to give you a whole bunch of background. I think we know, if we're regular shul goers and daveners, that Shacharit and Mincha have a certain status, and Arvit, Ma'ariv, seems to have a lesser status. The major distinction would be the repetition of the Amidah. You have a repetition in Shacharit and at Mincha, and Musaf, and Ne'ilah, You don't have a repetition at Arvit. More to the point for women is the fact that many people hold that Shacharit and Mincha are obligatory upon women and not Ma'ariv. And the question is, what's with Ma'ariv? Why should it be such? The Mishnah, where this whole thing starts, uses a language which needs explanation, and the commentaries in the Gemara give you the explanation. When it discusses Tfilat HaShachar, the morning prayer, it gives a deadline according to one opinion, a deadline according to another opinion. Mincha has its deadlines. And when it comes to Ma'ariv, the expression in the Mishnah is Tfilat HaErev, I think it says that, Ein La Keva, has no set time. So Rashi says, quoting the Gemara, what do you mean no set time? It means kol halayla, all night. Well, if it means kol halayla, say kol halayla. Why say ein la keva? It's a strange terminology. Whenever Mishnah does that, it's coming to teach us something additional. And in this case, there's a history to Ma'ariv that it was not originally required. It was an optional prayer. If you knew how to daven, and you were motivated to daven in the evening, then you davened Ma'ariv. And if not, Shacharit and Mincha in some way was enough. Of course, Ma'ariv contains Kriyat Shema of the night, and that was obligatory. But that's a different story. You could say Shema at night without saying Arvit, and apparently in the history and evolution of prayer, there was a time where it wasn't obligatory. Therefore, when the practice developed that we should have the Shaliach Tzibur, the Chazan, repeat the Amidah, the original purpose of it was on behalf of those Jews in the congregation who didn't know how to daven. And because it was an obligation, we needed to help them fulfill their obligation. So we went over to a guy and we said like this, since you don't have a sitter, and we're talking about the days before printed Sidurim, imagine if you had to sit down and hand copy an entire sitter and a Chumash and Rashi's commentary and all of Mishnayot and Shulchan Aruch and whatever else you wanted, that you had to do it in a notebook by hand. It's not an easy thing to do. So there was a lot of davening by heart. And that's good if you know the prayers by heart. If you don't, you need help. The help came in the form of the Chazan, also known as the Shaliach Tzibur, or the Shatz by the abbreviation, who originally did not repeat the Amidah. He originally said his silent Amidah out loud. And even though it's supposed to be said silently, silent is not going to help the next guy. So he was selected to say his silent Amidah out loud. Anyone who did not know how to say it on his own was to stand with his feet together, quiet, listen, answer Amen to each bracha, not even Baruch Hu uVaruch Shemo, only Amen at the end of each bracha, and even bend your knees and bow your head when you see the Chazan do it, exactly like him. And then we apply the rule, Ona Kimivarech, a person who answers Amen is like one who says the brachot himself, and that became your Amidah. That was necessary at Shacharit and Mincha, which are required prayers. It never happened for evening because it was originally optional. So a person who didn't know how to daven was exempt from davening Arvit. And therefore, it never developed that there should be someone saying it out loud on behalf of those people who didn't know how to daven, because they didn't have to say it. Somewhere along the line, it became required. But it retained the trappings of its original format of not being obligatory. And this gives it a little bit of an identity crisis, and it leaves it open for misunderstanding. But it turns out that those who obligate women to daven even the twice a day don't include Ma'ariv because of its history. It wasn't originally required. So they're not going to put that on a woman to have to daven Arvit. They let her off with that. And Chazar HaShatz never developed for Arvit either. Somewhere along the line, I don't know when, we let the Chazan say his Amidah quietly to himself also, and that was considered practicing for saying it out loud, and then we turned it into a repetition. And in Hebrew it's called Chazarat HaShatz, the repetition of the Shmon Esrei, of the Shliach Tzibur. But that wasn't the original. And to this day, there is one significant Jewish community that still does it the good old way. And that's, take a wild guess, the Yemenites. If anything, if anyone has the older customs, it's the Taimanim. And Yemenites, to this day, do not have a repetition of the Amidah for Shachrit and Mincha. Instead, their Shaliach Tzibur says it out loud. Everybody says it quietly if they know how to daven. And if they don't, there it is, just like it says so in the Gemara. And they're the ones that retained it. So, back in the time of the Tanaim, it was already a question. And this Gemara says that a student went to Rabbi Yehoshua and said, is the evening tefillah compulsory or optional? He replied, it is optional, reshut. If you want to daven, you can, but you don't have to. Then he did a bad thing. He then presented himself before Rabban Gamliel and asked him, is the evening tefillah compulsory or optional? The same student asking, not Rabbi Yehoshua, who was the Av Beit Din, but Rabban Gamliel, who was one rank higher than Nasi. And he said, it is compulsory. Then he didn't stop the student. He said, did not Rabbi Yehoshua tell me that it is optional? Which is a nasty thing to do, but that's my comment. The Gemara doesn't say that. He said, wait till the all of the Rabbanim come into the yeshiva for their session of learning. And when they entered the Beis Medrash, he had this same student rise and inquire if the evening tefillah is optional or required. Rabban Gamliel, who was the Rosh Yeshiva, replied, it is compulsory. Said Rabban Gamliel to the sages, is there anyone who disputes this? Rabbi Yehoshua, who was the second in command, answered that question by saying, no, nobody disputes it. Rabban Gamliel said to Rabbi Yehoshua, did they not report you to me as saying that it is optional? And then he went on, Rabban Gamliel, and said, Yehoshua, stand up and let them testify against you. Now here the issue is the authority of the Sanhedrin. And when it came to Rabban Gamliel's attention that Rabbi Yehoshua answered something different from the way that Rabban Gamliel paskened, he needed to set the record straight, because in those days the Sanhedrin established the halacha. You didn't have, my rabbi says this, well, my rabbi says this, my rabbi's better than your rabbi. They didn't have that kind of thing, and they shouldn't have had that thing, and we shouldn't have it. Rabbi Yehoshua stood up and said, were I alive and they dead, meaning the people who told you this, the living could contradict the dead. But now that he is alive and I am alive, sounds better in Aramaic, how can the living contradict the living? In other words, yes, I admit that I told them that Tfilat Arvit was reshut, optional. Rabban Gamliel remained sitting and expounding as he did in giving a shir, and he did not give Rabbi Yehoshua permission to sit. Rabbi Yehoshua remained standing until all the people there began to shout and say to Chuspit, the Chuspit is a Meturgaman. There was a rabbi in charge of, he was like the olden times version of a microphone and an amplifier. He had a loud voice, Rabban Gamliel would say something. Not everybody in the room could hear him. He would repeat it out loud, maybe even clarifying some points, so it's better than an amplifier. And they wouldn't say to Rabban Gamliel, stop, don't continue, look, you left Rabbi Yehoshua standing. But if you shut off the amplifier, then it's the same effect as telling the speaker to stop talking. Then they said, how long is Rabban Gamliel going to insult Rabbi Yehoshua? On Rosh Hashanah last year, he insulted him. He insulted him in the matter of the firstborn in the affair of Rabbi Tzedok. Let's not go into those now. And he insults him again. Come, they said, let us depose him. They were removing Rabban Gamliel from the Nasi'ut. Whom shall we appoint instead? We can hardly appoint Rabbi Yehoshua, because he is the one of the, he's involved in this issue. So it would be like a super slap in the face to Rabban Gamliel, to remove Rabban Gamliel from the Nasiut and vote in Rabbi Yehoshua, who was his antagonist. We can hardly appoint Rabbi Akiva, because perhaps Rabban Gamliel will bring a curse on him because he has no zchut avot, ancestral merit. That was a big thing. Let us then appoint Rabbi Elazar. No Yechis, right. Let us then appoint Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who is wise and wealthy, and the tenth in descent from Ezra. Now, the reason they mention wealthy is the Nasi was in a position of dealing with the foreign occupation government and needed sometimes to smooth the wheels for the Jewish people. Anyway, they went and said to him, will your honor consent to become head of the academy? He replied, I will go and consult the members of my family, meaning I will check with my wife. He went and consulted his wife. She said to him, this, by the way, has nothing yet to do with Vayera, but it does touch on it, you'll see in a moment, and then in a bigger way. Perhaps they will, his wife said to him, perhaps they will depose you later on. He replied to her, Lishtamesh inish yoma chada bakosa demokra ulamachar litaver, which is one of my favorite Aramaic expressions, which means, it's a proverb, let a man use a valuable cup for one day even, and let it break the next. In other words, this I used to have with my mother, Allah Shalom. There would be a beautiful crystal candy dish in the break front. And I ask her, how come we never use it, even when we have company and fancy things? And she said she likes it so much she doesn't want it to break. So that's what I thought of here. His wife was saying, don't become the Nasi and take them, because they'll make up with Rabban Gamliel, you'll be out, and it'll be embarrassing for you. He said, the honor of being Nasi, I would rather have for one day and then lose it than never have it at all. But he put it in the form of this well-known Aramaic expression, proverb, let a man use a cup of honor for one day, even if it be broken the next. She said to him, you have no white hair, which means you're young. You don't look the part of Nasi, and people won't respect you. He actually was 18 years old, and a miracle happened for him that his hair turned white. That is why Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, Hare ani kiven shivim shana. It's in the Haggadah, we quote that Mishnah. I am like a man of 70. So the Gemara says, what do you mean he's like a man of 70? He's either 70 or he isn't. No, his hair turned white, and he got the appearance of an older man, and he accepted the position. Now, a Tana, unnamed, taught. On that day, the doorkeeper was removed and permission was given to the students to enter. Let me explain what this means. The Nasi was in charge of admission requirements for the academy, for the yeshiva. Rabban Gamliel had a strict policy that required qualifications before you enter the yeshiva. You can't just come and say, I want to learn. You have to ki'ilu pass an exam. You have to pass an exam. that's the way I'm saying it in more modern terms. What Rabbi Akiva said, what Rabbi Gamliel said was, no person whose character does not correspond to his exterior may enter the Beit Midrash. The expression in Hebrew is tocho kiboro. Inside, he's like outside. In other words, he could look the part. He could put on a black suit and a white shirt and a hat and hold a chumash under his arm and come and claim that he wants to learn, but they wanted to find out what was really inside of him. When Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah took over, he removed that entrance requirement, and the Gemara says many stools were added to the Beis Medrash as a result. Rabbi Yochanan said there's a difference of opinion on this matter between Abba Yosef and the rabbis. One authority says that 400 extra stools were added, another one says 700. Whatever it was, there was such an influx of students that Rabbi Gamliel became alarmed and said, perhaps, God forbid, I withheld Torah from Israel. I never dreamed that so many people would want to learn, and I was preventing them, says Rabbi Gamliel, by making a requirement. This is the old open admissions kind of thing. Now here's the whole point of my telling this whole thing. He had a dream, Rabbi Gamliel, and the Gemara says that he was given this dream, Mishamayim, of beautiful containers filled with ashes. And the commentaries say, what was the significance of that? It was a message to Rabbi Gamliel saying, it looks good on paper, but there's no substance to it. It's nice, it looks so, look, we had to add 400 new benches in order to accommodate all the students, but if they're like beautiful jugs filled with ashes, what's the point? Now here's the other point. The Gemara adds a comment to that, that this, however, really meant nothing. He was only shown this to calm him down. This is left hanging as a Gemara without a bottom line, and the commentaries say it. Well, what does the Gemara mean? That the dream that he had assuaged his feeling that he did the wrong thing by having an admissions policy, and it was okay to do that, or was he so distraught that he had this dream just to put himself at peace, but it was really a proper criticism that there was an influx of students in the Beis Medrash, and he was wrong for having been so strict.
You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Vayera. You're either listening on Arut Sheva, Israel National Radio, or on OU Radio. We're in the middle, actually towards the end of a discussion, if you could call it a discussion since I'm the one who's speaking, a presentation on a topic that stems from the fact that Sarah Imenu demanded of Avraham that Yishmael be expelled from the house in order to protect Yitzchak. We're not directly applying that, but train of thought to a situation of high standards in admission policies of schools. In between, of course, we took a long time presenting the Gemara, which is, I guess, the source of this ongoing debate, and it's a very unresolved situation. I have a little bit more of that shear that I gave the Torah Tidbits folders. I'm going to cut out a whole chunk of the personal experience I had in Yeshiva of Central Queens when we basically experimented on homogeneous classes rather than heterogeneous. And in Jewish studies, we had been doing it differently in math for many, many years. And people have good things and bad things to say about the different systems. So I'm not going to go through that whole piece, but hopefully we'll come to a conclusion. Not really a conclusion. We'll draw the presentation to an end. And I want to bring up another very significant ramification of something from Parshat Vayera, very applicable to us today. But first, let's have a listen to a nice Shabbat mood setter. It's one of the Zemirot of Shabbat, Baruch Kel Elyon. I like this particular version of it because it combines slow, soft music with a peppier nigun, Baruch Kel Elyon.
Oh, my. zokhol besyoy ashamos litachoy tar noy kigavonei
back to our topic. I know over the years that I taught in the States that we had this discussion all the time. We had it on a school level and we had it on a class level. On a school level, every administrator, principal, executive director, board of education has to grapple with the idea, do we shoot to have the top caliber students and do we turn kids away one after the other when they don't meet up to that standards, so that the students that we have will be excellent quality, the teachers can concentrate on them, and they will achieve great things, to which the question is, well, what about the rest of the students? What are they supposed to do? The answer often is, well, they'll go to another school that's not as picky as we are. Or do you become like those other schools? And you say, we have a more liberal policy of who we take. We still interview kids. We still want good kids. But if a kid is not such a great student, we hope to bring him up to scratch by the quality of our teaching and by the quality of the class. So it's really an ongoing debate. Now, I think the bottom line in all of this is you need both. You cannot have every yeshiva and seminary taking only the best students and rejecting the poor ones, because what are they supposed to do? So if you have, and I don't know if it's by official agreement or an unofficial agreement, but if you have a situation where a school will accept students that your school rejects, then you could reject them. And as long as there's some place for them also. And there's always stories of, good things that come out of it. And it's a tough choice. When I went to high school, I wanted to go to a different high school. And my excuse was, there are boys in this school which I'm afraid will influence me in the wrong way. And my parents said, we know you, and we know if anybody's going to influence, it's you that's going to influence other students. But I don't know if that's a solution either. It's a tough call. Let's go back to the Torah. Sarah, in the pasuk I didn't read, is Vatera Sarah et ben Hagar haMitzrit asher yodala Avraham mitzachek. Sarah saw this older boy in the house that Abraham fathered from the Egyptian maidservant Hagar. And you could see in the wording of the pasuk that Sarah was putting it into a perspective. We're not talking about a child by a first marriage that should have equal status to her own child. We're talking about someone who was not to be part of the heritage and the spiritual dynasty of Avraham Avinu. And when she saw him, mitzachek. Now, mitzachek is a very loaded word. The word tzchok means laughter. And you really could do a whole study, which I think has been done more than once, on the use of the word litzachek in Torah, and especially in these parshiot right now that we're reading. For example, when God assures Avraham, after Avraham was resolved and resigned to not having his own child, and that Eliezer would be his heir, God said, you will have a child, and he did, Yishmael, and God said, no, that's not the only child you will have, you will actually have one from Sarah. And Avraham laughed in glee and thanks to God. At least that's the connotation that we read into it. A couple of psukim later, the Torah tells us that Sarah overheard that the angel said to Avraham, Sarah will have a child, and she laughed. And we don't say that was the same kind of laugh as was mentioned by Avraham, because there God said himself in the Torah, does she question my ability to have her have a child? And there was doubt in Sarah's laughter. And then it's meant as a mild rebuke that she laughed and couldn't deny that she really was questioning and doubting. And then the Torah uses the same word for what Yishmael did, and Rashi says, Lashon Avodah Zarahu. It is a language of idolatry. And it brings a quote. And later, when Yitzchak and Rivka are in Gerar and posing as brother and sister, it says there that Avimelech looks through the window of their house, and they were mitzachek. Now, it doesn't mean laughing, and it doesn't mean doubting, and it doesn't mean chas v'chalila avodah zara. It meant behaving like husband and wife. So, now she says to Avraham, this will be an evil influence on Yitzchak, and I want her out. Maybe Avraham thought, if he stays under my roof, I can coach him, I can tutor him, I can improve him, and he won't be the negative influence, but I and our son Yitzchak will be a positive influence. It's a very, very difficult call. And the only reason that Avraham didn't have to worry about making that decision is Vayomer Elokim El Avraham. God says to Avraham, Al yeirah be'einecha al hanar ve'al hamatecha, don't feel bad about the lad and his mother. Kol asher tomar eilecha Sarah shma bekolah. Listen to what Sarah tells you. Now let's go back to the Gemara. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is praised for not responding, okay, I will accept the nesiut. Instead he said, I have to consult my wife. Shades of Sarah. However, he didn't listen to her, but he consulted her. So we get a combination of lessons here. Yes, one should consult his wife on decisions that deal with the family. And no, it does not mean that just because she says it, you have to listen to it, but you have to take it into account. Anyway, those are some of the things that that come, not even from the main parts of the Seder.
Okay, let me shift gears now. I'm going to bring up a topic which I'm sure I presented in the past, but as we are, so to speak, approaching Annapolis, I think it's very important to review this. The climax that I referred to earlier of Parshat Vayera is the binding of Isaac Akedat Yitzchak. It is clear from the verse that this is to be a test of Avraham's faith, because it says, V'ho Elokim nisa et Avraham, God tested Abraham. and said to him, called to him, and then told him to bring his son Yitzchak as a sacrifice on Har HaMoriah. Later in the portion of the Akedah, where an angel at God's instructions stops Avraham from actually slaughtering his son, the statement that's made is, you have passed the test with flying colors, and I now know that you are the complete believer that we had to show to the people of the world and to your people. I don't know if that's the best way of putting it. It doesn't matter. What is crucial is the Rashbam, one of the Torah commentaries, a grandson of Rashi, who reacts to the opening words of the Akedah portion, Vayehi achar hadavarim ha'ele, and it came to pass after these things. Rashbam says, whenever the Torah uses that expression, Vayehi achar hadavarim ha'ele, it is referring not just to things that happened in the past, but to the immediately preceding topic as presented in the Torah, in the text, which is the agreement between Avraham and Avimelech, the king of Gerar, where the Rashbam puts it like this. That agreement included conceding to Avimelech part of the Eretz Yisrael that God promised Avraham Avinu for himself and his descendants who will follow. God says to Avraham, you went and made an agreement for your children and your children's children in perpetuity, giving up part of the land which I gave you. I want you to take that son, Yitzchak, through whom your whole hopes for the future exist, and bring him as a sacrifice to me on Har HaMoriah, and then we'll see what happens to your agreement. In other words, says the Rashbam, and it's based on a Medrash, God was angry with Avraham Avinu for giving up some of the land which he was promised by God. I can't ignore the fact that the leaders of the state of Israel are once again on the brink of violating the sacred trust of the Jewish people, which, according to one of the founding fathers of the state of Israel, David Ben-Gurion, is something that no Jewish leader has the right ever to do, to give away part of Eretz Yisrael. We are being squeezed into a situation, and one of our best friends in the world, our best friend in the world, the United States of America, is pushing us towards the painful concessions necessary, to which I respond hogwash, because this does not do anything for us, and there are editorials that are written every single day that can express it better than I can, but we have to look at it from a Torah perspective and say this is not on the bargaining table. We cannot, will not ever give away part of Eretz Yisrael. That's what we should be saying. And this, to me, was a very poignant Rashbam commentary, because it put a perspective on Akedat Yitzchak. Yes, it's a test of faith, and yes, everything else that comes from it, and how crucial it is to the structure of Jewish life, and the role model, and the epitome of dedication and devotion. But according to the Medrash, through the Rashbam, it was motivated by God's anger at the very, very same thing that Israel's leaders, who are far, far smaller than Avraham Avinu, are talking about doing now. This is obviously an acceptable thing to say on Israel National Radio, and this show is not going to be censored, at least not by me, for broadcast on OU Radio. I am not spouting OU policy, and if I am taken to task for saying something in the context of Torah Tidbits Audio on OU Radio that does not fit one of the resolutions made by the whatever committee of the OU, I'm ready to be taken to task for it. But I will say categorically, this is not a political issue. This is a matter of Jewish life and Torah, and we have to do whatever we can to prevent the government of the State of Israel from making a terrible, terrible mistake by even indicating any kind of willingness in this direction. On that note, I will wish you a Shabbat Shalom. L'hishtamea.